Go on with a planned gift to KABU. Consider adding KABU to your will or add KABU as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KABU along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KABU to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032 or email development@kabu.fm to notify us of your plans.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the screening of Queer Core, How to Punk a Revolution, on Sunday, October 21st at 7:30 at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Queer Core, How to Punk a Revolution gives one answer to the question, what happens when the community you need is not the community you have? Queer Core shows the development of the movement through the rise of artists who used radical queer identity to push back equally against gay assimilation and homophobic culture. The film features Bruce LaBruce, G.B. Jones, John Waters, Tom Jennings, Team Dresch, and many more. Again, that's the screening of Queer Core, How to Punk a Revolution, on Sunday, October 21st, 7:30, at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am your host, Michael Cathcart. Joining me in the studio today is my good friend Zach Markovich. Zach, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome. Honored to be here.
It's great to have you in the studio with me. Just a little bit of background about why I have Zach here with me and how we know each other. About 5 years ago, 4 years ago now, Zach and I met in an interesting way. I was out at the People's Climate March in downtown Portland at the Waterfront Park, and was talking to some amazing people out there. And towards the end of the event, as things were wrapping up, there's a lot of people around, a lot of commotion, but there was this voice that just cut through the crowd and cut through all the noise. And particularly there was one song that was being performed. It was a slow, very kind of moody version of Bad Moon Rising by Creedence Clearwater Revival. And it struck me, it got in my head, and pretty much had to cut off what I was talking to, whoever I was talking to, and just walk down there and figure out who this voice was coming from. I went all the way down to the stage, and standing right there was Zach, just him alone in the, with his acoustic guitar, and he was filling the entire bowl there at Waterfront Park with his voice and with his song. And it was an amazing experience, and it really resonated with the moment that we were in, you know, this huge collective movement that we were a part of. At Waterfront Park there, and there was a lot of great energy, and Zach was really kind of riding high on that energy, and it really kind of fit the moment. And I knew right then, I was like, I got to play music with this guy. And so we hit it off and began playing music together, myself on drums, him on guitar and vocals. And we, from there, had, you know, played a lot of different kinds of shows, but some of the most important things that we did were being a part of some other protest moments here in the Northwest, particularly playing at a number of events surrounding the protests against the Tesoro Savage oil export terminal up in Vancouver, Washington, mm-hmm. right across the river. I mean, I don't know if you have anything to throw in on that there.
But particularly, we played one of the nights where they had a all-day hearing.
Yeah.
And that I believe it was, what was it, a 12-hour hearing?
Yeah, it was the entire day.
And they brought us in to play some tunes for everyone there that was going to be speaking that night. And the opposition had quite a big crowd, and we were there to lift spirits. And
yeah.
We sure did. We played our blues tunes and we got people dancing, and it was a great night to be a part of something and help out.
Yeah, it was an amazing night because, I mean, you know, people had been there since probably somewhere around 7 or 8 in the morning, and we were in this giant, I mean, it was maybe a barn or a warehouse.
It was a barn, I believe, yeah. They do livestock events in there.
That's exactly what it was, yeah. So it was a huge, airy space, and it was full of people, and people were, you know, people were tired, they were exhausted, they'd been testifying in front of this committee for hours, and people were there to kind of recharge their batteries for the evening shift. And once we started playing, it took a few songs, but people really started to groove with what we were putting down and
dancing and clapping.
Yeah. It was amazing. It went from a room of kind of dead energy and tired souls to everyone focusing on the music and singing along and dancing along with us. And it was a really great experience. And ultimately, I mean, you know, obviously we were just a small part of it, but that export terminal was, that project was shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge victory and really proud
to
be part of it. Exactly. Yeah, so that's how Zach and I met. We've done a number of other things musically since then. But, you know, it kind of is serendipitous that we met through activism. And, you know, one of our most shining moments musically was another moment of activism, climate activism specifically. But anyways, it's, you know, the clock is ticking and we only have a little less than 30 minutes. So just jumping into some subjects that I'd like to talk about tonight. As most people out there know, if you're in the Portland area or if you are just a consumer of news, particularly Fox News, once again, Portland is on the national headlines and making national news, as, you know, little Beirut that it is, as a protest hub. This weekend, I believe it was Saturday evening, the Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys group that is centered in Vancouver, Washington, over the river, they came and had another one of their rallies downtown. Ostensibly, it was basically to push back or to confront, you know, the mayor of Portland and the police chief about their hands-off approach to
the previous protest the
exactly.
week before, correct?
Yeah, it was. There had been protests that had been occurring following the police shooting of Patrick Kimmons, and the right-wingers believed that the police hadn't done enough to step in and stop them from blocking the streets, and so they were calling out the mayor on that, I suppose, is what their objective was. It's an interesting, I mean, so that happened, and of course, as is often the case, it erupted. You know, Antifa protesters or counter-protesters showed up, and the right-wingers marched, and it descended into violence or street brawls out in front of Kelly's Olympian. And that made national news, and it, of course, made a Fox News segment out of it, which, you know, I don't know how many people out there listening watch Fox News, but for the many people that do, they referred to Portland as a loony bin. They called our mayor
loony
a nut
bin, hey?
Yeah, a loony bin is, I believe, the exact term they used. They called the mayor a, I wrote it down, let's see, they called him a nut job, I think, or a wing nut or something like that. And they held that instance up as an example of left-wing mob mentality. Now, mm-hmm. you know, considering that the actual event was prompted entirely by the other side, the right-wing protesters, you know, the instigators in that situation, it's a little bit opportunist of Fox News and their right-wing views to hold this up as left-wing mob mentality. But it kind of furthers their attempt to claim victimhood in this political climate. but I bring it up, you know, not only because we are here in Portland and that was this weekend, but also because both you and I were down there separately. We happened to be, you know, out in the middle of this. And I was just hoping that we could have a little conversation, you know, share experiences, what you saw down there.
Well, I had initially stumbled upon the protest in the very early stages. Patriot Prayer and their group of what seemed about maybe 50 was on the corner by Nordstrom, and they were shouting, "Replace our mayor." And
that's right.
Things like that. They're typical things, but it was quite a strange scene because you had them doing that, but at the same time, there was a festival happening in Pioneer Square. So there's food trucks, people eating, and then there's local bands playing rock and roll and stuff. And so you've got people having a good time, and you've got these folks over here angry, shouting. But also, there were about 5 to 10 people on the other side of the street that they were shouting to no one, and that's what struck me the most.
Screaming into the void, if you
will.
Yeah, I mean, that was a scene that's the time that I saw it as well, was, you know, coming out of that event at Pioneer Square and walking up to the corner by Nordstrom and, you know, making my way through a really dense crowd and all of a sudden realizing that it was just a bunch of folks, you know, carrying the wearing MAGA hats and those Proud Boy polos and, you know, carrying Don't Tread on Me flags and things like that. And it took me a moment to realize what had materialized. It was such a strange moment because there was this joyous event, this really nice charitable event happening in the square.
When you had played
exactly.
Previously, one of your bands had just played, I believe, right?
Yeah, we had just finished a set and we were loading our stuff out of there. And it was this great, you know, we were riding high off this, the crowd was awesome and it's a bunch of kids and families present, and then you walk up to the corner and all of a sudden there's just a bunch of, I mean, for lack of a better term, you know, there's white nationalists, white supremacists, potentially Nazis up there screaming, you know, screaming into the void, screaming at anyone who would listen about, you know, their grievances and their perceived victimhood in this moment that we're in. And it just, it struck me that it's like, well, no one, you know, everyone else is enjoying their day. Everyone else is here doing positive things. You know, this is a charitable event. People are here to spread love and positivity. Mm-hmm. And they descended on that moment to try and basically gain attention and provoke a reaction.
Well, I believe that this march was billed as a march to cleanse the streets of Portland as well. It was to cleanse Portland and to make things safe again for people. And I'm not entirely sure who they're making it safe for. But that was the idea. And, you know, what the night evolved into is just, you know, they weren't there to cleanse anything.
Right. That's some pretty scary rhetoric to use, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, talking to a bunch of, you know, people who tend to fall on the more Nazi side of the spectrum, talking about cleansing the streets and, you know, things with that type of language. That's not what you want.
Mm-mm.
It's not what you want to be hearing.
No, it's not. It's not what we need, and it's not helping anything. It's not helping any conversation. It's not helping any situation. We all need to talk,
right?
And shouting, you know, on a street, just at each other, we're not gonna solve anything.
No, and it brings up. You know, obviously there was the Fox News take on the situation, and I'm no fan of Fox News, and they tend to take very wrong perspectives or basically misleading perspectives on a lot of things. And, you know, their take on this was just objectively wrong. But there's also been a lot of other, you know, more centrist or, you know, less extreme versions of media talking about what happened this weekend and questioning why it is that the police don't step in more, mm-hmm. Why it is that these events keep happening here in Portland, and what it is about this area or, you know, this moment or whatever it is that lead this to be the center of this activity. I mean, you know, most of the people on the right side of this argument or the right wing side of this argument are coming down from, you know, they don't live in Portland.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks coming in from Vancouver and up in Washington, it seems, you know. And I think that's another thing of it's ridiculous because they don't live in this city.
Right.
And they're coming into this city to say they're going to cleanse it because the police are and the mayor aren't keeping it safe for the citizens of this city. Now, some of the things they want for this country, you get where I'm taking this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, so it sort of begs the question that if these folks, they are picking up on this rhetoric of cleansing the streets or making things safer, you know, that sort of very paternal rhetoric, the paternal instinct or whatever it is that that tends to be embodied in sort of fascist movements, you know, is it safe to say this is clearly being stirred up by the political climate in Washington and nationally, you know, with, you know, who is our president and the things that he's been saying over the last couple of years? I mean, I think, personally, I think it is pretty fair to say. I don't know what your take is on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that gets confusing with a group like Patriot Prayer is it says right there in their motto or their tagline that they are standing up to corruption with peace and love. And so if that is your motto, if that is what you are doing, then why can't we talk?
Right.
Why, you know, because that's all we want. You know, that's all other folks want. That's all their opposition. Like that's we all just, you know, a lot like we're fighting the wrong people, you know.
Right. And you know, it's kind of a mark of or a common thread throughout all the different elements of, you know, sort of right-wing extremism in this country right now that, you know, the rhetoric is always, well, you know, the left is anti-free speech. We're here to protect free speech, and all we want is to be able to speak, and you all need safe spaces, and you're all snowflakes. But then when pressed on these issues, or when challenged, you know, to debate ideas or to have a rational, you know, discussion, or even when views opposing what your views being stated are, when those come forward, instead of accepting that as like, all right, this is part of free speech, and I'll rebut that with my ideas, it descends into name calling and right, slander and slinging hatred and outright violence. And it, you know, it's pretty clear that the folks who, you know, it's a lot of projection. It's the folks who tend to be screaming the loudest about free speech that don't actually want free speech for anyone other than themselves.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And you have, you know, even a situation like what just happened earlier today with Elizabeth Warren coming forward and, you know, she has a DNA test or an ancestry test showing that she's Native American, which is rebutting President
right,
Trump's claim that
right,
she isn't. And, you know, it seems like she's basically just calling for a debate. She says, all right, now that I have this, come debate me. Let's talk about these issues. And he hasn't responded with, all right, you know, you name the time and place, but rather, I don't believe it, and she's wrong, and she's lying, you know, and more name
deny,
calling.
Deny, deny.
Exactly. So when asked to deal with, or to allow free speech and to engage in a civil debate, where there's free speech allowed on both sides, the side that cries for it the most tends to, time and again, not be actually in favor of it for anyone besides themselves.
Certainly, and I think part of the problem is a lot of us. Or all of us, we're scared of being wrong, and
right,
so it can be hard to enter into that debate or conversation with a person with an opposing view, because when pressed, you may have to admit that you are wrong about something, and that takes a bit of strength. And I know a lot of people out there believe that it's a sign of weakness is being wrong and failure. When in like that's completely false,
right?
To admit you're wrong and to realize you're wrong and then to move forward past that is strength. It, you know, that's how you can move forward.
Absolutely.
And I think if we can all start talking and be willing to make mistakes and be willing to hear and listen and admit, oh, you know, that makes sense. You're right about that. I'm wrong. We you know, it would help. I'm willing to try. I would love to have some conversations like that, where we meet and we talk. You give me your views, I'll give you mine. We don't have to call each other snowflakes. We don't have to be mean to each other. We don't have to say mean things about presidents and any of that. We can just talk about our views, not the talking points, but our views on what's happening and why we feel the way we do. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, it may never have really been the case that, that there was more civil discourse in our political spectrum or our political sphere, but it does seem like there was a time where you could debate opposing viewpoints without descending into hatred and that, you know, violence.
Everything didn't always have to become a circus.
Right. And I think, you know, and obviously there's a call from, you know, quote unquote centrists and the like to be able to find common ground and compromise in these discussions. And I think that's a very valid approach. But I think it is also important to point out, or at least to recognize, that over, you know, the last 40, 50 years in this country and seems to be around the world, for lack of a better term, the Overton window has shifted so far to the right that, like, the center of our political discourse or what is acceptable political positions to hold in the mainstream in this country have gone so far to the right that, you know, when you talk about we need to find compromise between the two sides,
right?
Essentially what you're saying is we need to find compromise between kind of right-wing conservative, you know, potentially socially liberal, but generally conservative folks and what seems to be, you know, extremist right-wing borderline Nazi or at least borderline fascist folks. And that's, you know, obviously we need to find a way to have common ground and to have civil discussion, but there can't just be complete, it has to be an acknowledgement that the two sides are not just, are not acting in good faith. There's one side that really does tend to be, trolls and outright hateful.
Certainly.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's likely, this is not going to be the end all, or this won't be the last time we see fighting violence in the streets here in Portland.
Oh no. I actually, yesterday morning, I'm not sure, but, I live downtown near the park blocks, right on the park blocks. And, I looked out my window around 8 o'clock and I saw folks that were on a jog being led with someone with an American flag, you know, on a flagpole. These were not ROTC folk.
Right.
They were all older, you know, they were past that age. I don't know if these were remnants of the night before. I'm not sure. You know, I got some clothes on real quick and I went out and to, you know, see what was happening.
Yeah.
They were doing calisthenics a little further up the park blocks, you know, sets of 10. They were doing push-ups with their backpacks. And, you know, I'm not trying to see something that wasn't there, but it felt kind of like, oh man, or is there going to be another protest? Say one of them was on their phone, kind of looked like the dude from Patriot Prayer.
Right.
I wasn't sure. One guy, a passerby, like had his phone out and he was taking video of him. And I don't know, but it felt like they were here, and still here. And doing their morning workout and prayer, with their flag, everything. But it was very strange because it wasn't, it was not an actual military deal.
Right. This is always strange when that just has weird connotations to it.
It was weird.
Yeah.
It was intimidating to see them out there running. Strange. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, hopefully that was just some CrossFit group or something.
That's what I'm hoping. Yeah. But I do have a feeling that they will be back and there will be more clashes. We don't need to have these groups meeting and clashing. And
right.
I think it would be best to see the police step in a little sooner. I'm not from the camp that says, let them fight. That's not me.
Right.
We don't need to have that in our streets. If we're going to be making things safer for our citizens, we need to stop fighting each other and stop being willing to fight each other.
Right. And that's, you know, that actually, it's interesting you said that, because there was a quote from Chief Outlaw, the police chief here,
mm-hmm.
who she said basically that the objective, you know, in these situations, the police determine on a case-by-case basis whether or not to intervene.
Okay.
And they said that the objective in approaching all of these different demonstrations in the street is to provide a safe environment for participants, non-participants, and bystanders.
Hmm.
So, you know, if that is the case, I wonder if all of this national attention will begin to put pressure on the mayor, on the police chief, to change their tactics a little bit, which of course previously they had a lot of pressure under the previous mayor and even under this mayor mm-hmm. about their response to peaceful demonstrations following the election. There was a kind of a police riot of sorts, multiple instances of that, and so folks, you know, push back against that, and now the police have gone the other way, and you have the right wing is attacking them now, and so it seems like there is, I mean, not to totally try and defend the police here, but the, you know, there's damned if you do, damned if you don't type of situation.
That's the way it goes.
Right.
You know, that's that's the way it goes.
Well, just because we have about just a couple minutes left, you know, as is always the case, we ran out of time for a lot of stuff. But Zach, this is Labor Radio, and would like to tie it into working folks. Although this is all relevant to working people, because if you work or live in the city, you have to deal with this.
Yes.
And this is a conversation that encompasses a lot of anti-union rhetoric and things like that. But specifically, Zach, you were spent a long time, or, you know, a good chunk of your life as a musician busking
we'll say
in the street.
A few years.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm
not that old yet.
But, I mean, that's you know, that's working, and that's out there on the streets working every single day. You're dealing with all different walks of life.
Certainly, yeah.
And it's a way to make a living, but it's a way to make a living that I think does not get much attention. You know, either on the labor side of things or on just the general music side of things, as like a way to get your music heard. And to make, you know, a living as a worker,
right.
And you actually got some, you know, some positive feedback and some attention and some a little bit of success out of that.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, I had busked for about 3 years in my early 20s, and I had started with a plan, and that plan actually worked to a T. The plan was I was really into the blues, so I would learn how to play the blues well because I was getting into it, and I'd play with a slide to attract people when I'm on the street. Once I was playing on the street, I would attract people. They'd like the music. They're not used to hearing this, so they'd like it.
Yeah.
And then someone would say, hey, I like your music. I want to be in a band with you.
Sounds familiar.
Right. And that happened with you. And then, you know, someone would say, hey, I like your music. Why don't you come play here? And that ended up happening. I got many opportunities to go play private parties, barbecues, all sorts of different things that led to some lifelong friendships, which has been, you know, really neat. The work, though.
Yeah.
I had a hustle. I had a hustle. I was, at the time, I was crashing at a friend's place. So, you know, I didn't really have a room, but, I had a place on the floor, on a pad that was similar to a mattress. And, I would get downtown around 8 a.m. and I would have some coffee, and then I'd hit the streets outside of Powell's, and I'd usually be out there for a few hours.
Yeah.
And then take a break, and then I'd be back out there for a few more hours. And
it's a long work day.
I put in my time. But I made a lot of friends with Street Roots folks. You know, and a lot of people spanging and different sorts of things like that. And, you know, kind of all worked together. You know, I would get some money, and then I would leave that corner. So, you know, I wouldn't take away,
right.
Or give up that corner. So then the Street Roots folks could come in or that sort of thing.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, we are just about out of time here. Maybe, you know, in the future episode, we will pick this conversation up, because as is always the case, I had a lot more things we wanted to talk about. But Zach, thank you so much for joining me.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
this Thursday evening. If you're interested with music, my band Stoner Control will be playing at Kenton Club in North Portland around 9 o'clock. So come out and see us. You can always find me on Twitter at Michael B. Cath. My name is Michael Cathcart. Thank you again for listening. Have a great night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Food for the Soul on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Tiffany Center in Portland. Food for the Soul is a potluck in the park benefit and will feature performances by Tom Grant, Michael Allen Harrison, Norman Sylvester, Shelley Rudolph, and Julia McKay. Potluck in the Park has been serving weekly meals every Sunday to anyone in need since 1991. Again, that's Food for the Soul on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Tiffany Center, 1410 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see